This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Linda Kenyon. People in Israel and in Gaza are tense amid the war with Hamas. CBS's Ian Lee is in Israel.
There are still sirens sounding here in Tel Aviv, more than a week after Hamas launched its surprise attack. Shell-shocked residents are awaiting what's next.
For civilians in Gaza, it is a frightful situation.
Palestinians are scrambling to leave Gaza. The United Nations says almost a million residents have been displaced since the war started, with many following Israel's warning to flee.
Israel is amassing troops at the border ahead of an expected ground invasion of Gaza. President Biden spoke about civilians caught up in the conflict following the Hamas attack against Israel.
The humanitarian crisis in Gaza, innocent Palestinian families, and the vast majority have nothing to do with Hamas. They're being used as human shields.
Speaking at a human rights campaign dinner in Washington, the president also said Hamas bears responsibility for this war.
A week ago, we saw hate manifested another way in the worst massacre of Jewish people.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the Middle East speaking with heads of state trying to stop other nations from being drawn into the war. He met with the top leader in Saudi Arabia earlier today. He's now heading to Egypt for more talks. Late last week, he was in Israel speaking with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The State Fair of Texas was evacuated last night after three people were shot. Senior Corporal Melinda Gutierrez with the Dallas Police says one person is under arrest.
The suspect ran from the scene. Officers were able to locate him and took him into custody. A gun was also recovered. The individuals that have been involved in this have all been identified, and the investigation is ongoing.
The State Fair's website says it does not allow fair attendees from openly carrying guns at the event, but if a person has a license to carry a concealed weapon, they can go ahead and bring a handgun. An Olympic champ is said to be doing better, but still hospitalized. CBS's Matt Piper has this update.
Mary Lou Retton is said to be making remarkable progress in her battle with a rare form of pneumonia. So says her daughter McKenna, who alerted the world earlier in the week that her mom was fighting for her life and was asking for donations since she said Retton did not have health insurance. Now she says her mom's breathing is becoming stronger and that her path to recovery is steadily progressing. The donation page online had asked for $50,000. It's now at more than $400,000 in donations. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Mary Lou Retton became the first American female gymnast to win the Olympic all-around title in 1984. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Mike Moan reports.
Political researchers have long noted that Wisconsin has some of the most gerrymandered maps in the U.S., and Republican lawmakers have controlled the process in recent cycles. They're now pushing through a new plan to create an independent panel to draw new boundaries. But Yuseli Flores of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition says it contains loopholes that would allow the GOP to essentially keep the reins.
And it just seems like a huge power grab that could permanently change the process for how we draw our state maps, and it just feels like it's going to be detrimental to our communities.
The coalition and Democratic Governor Tony Evers have embraced the idea of an independent process, but they contend this Republican plan doesn't have a high enough threshold to prevent the legislature from intervening. They're urging the Senate to reject the bill, which recently cleared the Assembly. GOP leaders say it's an opportunity to adopt changes constituents have been demanding. But skeptics say this is strictly a response to the state Supreme Court and its new liberal majority agreeing to hear challenges to the most recent maps. Flores says while that plays out, the public doesn't need to be excluded from a rushed attempt to establish new rules.
And what we need is a more independent, transparent, and inclusive process rather than what they showed us.
If the state Senate gives its approval, Governor Evers has vowed to veto the bill. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in the redistricting case next month. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Gerrymandering is not democracy. It's commie government. It's fake government. You have somebody that gets 48% of the vote and they get 67% of the seats. That is not democracy. It's fake democracy. It's the appearance of law without the reality or the actuality of law.
Matt Flynn Direct. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
On Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated. Educators talking education.
Welcome back. Tuesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Producer Anya, you're amazing. Thank you so much for all of you out there. She is the best producer ever. Johnny Lupinacci, give some big props to Anya right there.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody who's, I mean, you know, right up to the last second, but we made it. Oh, Johnny Lupinacci, I am so excited. Sounds like you might be stealing the show. I want to first start off, though, by going recognizing yesterday, Indigenous Peoples Day. Okay. This was, too, just to put in perspective, in 2021, proclamation on Indigenous Peoples Day, and quote, since time immemorial, American Indians, Alaska Natives, Native Hawaiians have built vibrant and diverse cultures, safeguarding land, language, spirit, knowledge, and tradition across the generations. On Indigenous Peoples Day, our nation celebrates the invaluable contributions and resilience of Indigenous peoples, recognizes their inherent sovereignty, and commits to honoring the federal government's trust and treaty obligations to tribal nations. And it goes on. And we got a very special guest tonight.
Us
talk about Indigenous Peoples Days. Wahinkipi Topa, or Four Arrows. Four Arrows, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you?
Well, it's good to be here. And I've got a pencil right next to me that is not busted yet, but it's going to be.
That's it. By the time the show is over, you will truly have busted pencils, as we always say. Four Arrows, this is interesting because Johnny Lupinacci and I were talking about, okay, I got this great guest, and Johnny's like, oh my God, this is awesome. Tell me about the connection between Johnny Lupinacci and Four Arrows. Johnny, jump in.
Well, yeah, I was introduced to Four Arrows work through one of my mentors who's not no longer with us, but Chet Bowlers, who did a lot of work around environment and traditional elder knowledge around the world, and especially the importance of indigenous knowledge and indigenous scholars and their contributions to what schools ought to be really centering on and challenging in sort of confronting Western thought and understanding where, you know, indigenous knowledge systems offer, to put simply, you know, a more comprehensive and closer relationship with living systems writ large. So social justice and environmental justice together. So that's where I first, you know, came into contact with Four Arrows. And then through a few years later, through a shared mutual friend who's been a guest on the show before, you know, Dr. Bradley Porfilio, who is doing a lot of work with social justice leadership and leadership in social justice. And we were in a writing group together, and it was just always really inspiring. I learned a lot. And I consider him a mentor. So it's an honor to have him as a guest on the show tonight.
Well, you know, so I remember.
Go ahead, for us.
I was just going to say, I remember when I brought Chet Bowers to my university, 21 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he just made everyone mad because his presentation was on rethinking Paulo Freire. And Paulo Freire is really a hero of mine and of everybody at my university. But But Paulo, you know, had not engaged in indigenous worldview concepts. And Chet really wanted to point out that by missing that, we're all missing a lot of what could have been enhanced in Paulo's work. And I'll never forget the courage that Chet had to continue on. But by the end of his presentation, people were starting to sit back down again.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good.
Well, so on this point, though, let's do, before we jump into all of the amazing things that you've done for Eros, when you hear about Indigenous Peoples Day, you know, officially, quote, celebrated in 2021, is that a day, a special day, the fact that this has now been a proclaimed by the White House, is a long time coming? Give me a sense from an Indigenous point of view, how just the whole idea of Indigenous Peoples Day is viewed.
I think it's just icing on a cake. I appreciate the sincerity of the initial impact that brought these kinds of things to bear and recognition, but it's not nearly enough. It's still Columbus Day. It's still the federal holiday is Columbus Day. And there's still, you know, I remember I was in Ashland when Ashland, Oregon, a very progressive town, at first passed an ordinance that said that they would no longer look at Columbus Day, but they would look at Indigenous Peoples Day. And I made a point to go to all the hotels and restaurants, even some of the shops where they sold Indian flutes and Indian paraphernalia. And I said, you know, today is, right? And nobody knew what it was. You know, they said, well, Columbus Day is today, you know? And then a couple of them, I would say, well, no, it's Indigenous Peoples Day now. And they would go, well, why the hell did they do that? I mean, it's happening at a superficial level. And we've got to go deeper with two parts of it. And I hope we can talk just real briefly about those two parts. One is that we've got to recognize the need for sovereignty, because we're losing it so rapidly, and the languages are being lost. The governments are being met with so badly that now, you know, the Fort Indians are taken over. So last remaining knowledge, right? And then, as we do that fight for this place-based knowledge and wisdom, and then we've also got to re-indigenize ourselves in those places where there are no one left for even being able to think about sovereignty.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you put that forward, so okay, yeah, I appreciate the recognition Indigenous Peoples Day, but really getting into this, and I think for us, this is where you're going, the idea of Indigenous knowledge and how that can be informing us, you know, particularly here is where on Busted Pencils, we're talking, you know, to educators, future teachers, people out there who've got their kids in schools. When that, and Johnny talked about this, how might a teacher out there bring Indigenous ways of knowing into the classroom? And then maybe the better question is, why should Indigenous ways of knowing be a part of the classroom?
Well, the why is real simple and to answer. If we don't, then we're toast. That's, you know, I mean, you know, Noam Chomsky said the same thing in one of the books he endorsed of mine. He used the word doom. So I think that, to move on, how do we do this? Well, first of all, we have to recognize the hegemony. That's clear. You know, one of the most powerful forces on earth that's unrecognized by most of us, but recognized by the leaders who are driving us over the abyss, is this idea of trance-based learning. And we've got to really understand that we are, in essence, hypnotized in order to understand how can we be polluting our rivers, our lakes, our drinking water, are doing violence to one another. And so we've got to understand some of the worldview precepts that guided us fairly successfully, well, not to romanticize anything, but I mean in terms of sustainability for 99% of human history and levels of happiness and interconnectedness and ecological sustainability. You can't separate social justice from ecological justice. So I always like to say social ecological justice. Mm-hmm. And by looking deeply at these worldview precepts, we can begin to realize that our left and right brain hemispheres are out of balance. But education is, you know, is classically, you know, it designed not to go in this direction. In spite of all its rhetoric, it is a hegemonic institution to maintain the status quo. So it takes a lot of courage for educators to close the door, like my daughter is doing with her ditch school program. It's very successful. She's gotten 42 students into UC Berkeley and Stanford at age 16 and 17 by doing a completely unschooling way of a counter hegemonic program. So we can do it, but we're not, for the most part.
We're not doing it. However, if you would like to do it, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Our guest, Four Arrows, Indigenous Ways of Knowing, Day After Indigenous Peoples Day, Johnny Lupinacci, 3 minutes before break there. Set us up before we go in.
I mean, this is it's always an important conversation, and it happens to be a timely one this week because of, you know, Four Arrows points out the icing on the cake, the acknowledgement in some places, hopefully more and more places, but in some places that this is an Indigenous Peoples Day, and that, you know, in our schools and classrooms in some states, like in Oregon and in Washington and Montana, at least I know for sure, you know, they have, you know, as part of their curriculum since time immemorial.
Wisconsin, you know, too. Don't forget. Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin, okay, so huge, Wisconsin 34. Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, I think there is more than a foothold to be having this conversation, but it continues to remain as sort of icing on the cake, as an afterthought, you know, in addition to reading, writing, more math, some STEM. And so when we're having these conversations, you know, Four Arrows is reminding us that this isn't only an issue for acknowledging Indigenous people, although that's part of it, but it's really about all of us reconciling some of the assumptions we've had about what it means to be on this planet and what it means to be making decisions and living together on this planet. And that, you know, for the better part of more recent 500 years or so, that we've made some assumptions that are pretty problematic, pretty human supremacist, pretty white supremacist, Eurocentric ideas about individualism and disconnectedness and economic systems of exploitation that are antithetical to mature cultures around the world. And so, you know, we have Four Arrows a guest when we come back, who will dig into this, like, as we're thinking about what we can do in schools, how as educators, we can make a difference.
You think about that too, and that's it, Four Arrows. Think about that, helping educators make a difference, because that's what, Johnny, we do with Busted Pencils. Our guest last week when we had Michael Fullen on, just talking about this, again, a very Western educator, but really pointing out that if education doesn't change, the existential future of humanity is really in question. And so bringing you on to talk about this, I want to think about this, though, as we go to break. Indigenous ways of knowing, how do they help us center this idea of human harmony, and maybe even more important for what we do, democracy? It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk, and we will be back after the break.
Hustle up. We've got 8 more floors to go before lunch.
Sarusha's window washing business is reaching new heights.
Wipe, wipe, and let's roll.
They need more certified cleaners to keep online reviews crystal clear.
Team, I know we're hustling, but watch for streaks. Candace, can you give me a hand over here?
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates, and you can schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from the Indeed dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning.
and they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at Interscholastic Athletic Events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Any way you want it. That's how you always get it from Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. And for all you people out there going, that doesn't sound like Journey. It's not Journey. That's our band, Rise Against. Any way you want it. Well, we know how we want it. We have our special guest, Four Arrows, talking about, you know, we talked about Indigenous People's Day yesterday, Indigenous ways of knowing. And Four Arrows, I would kind of put this question before the break to put out there. You know, we had more of a Western educator last week talking about, you know, the problem, an existential problem. If we don't start getting schooling, teaching and learning right, that we've got a lot, you know, an existential threat, kind of what you're talking about here. And, you know, Johnny and I always talk about this idea of education and its centering in public education, particularly the idea that without it, there is no democracy. Johnny points out, though, talking about democracy and Indigenous ways of knowing, that's actually a really long time ago type of thing. Again, hey, Western people didn't invent democracy.
Well, of course. I mean, colonialization has never been democratic, right? And so if we go back to the founding of the ultimate example, supposedly, of democracy, and that's the United States of America, well, I mean, if we look at democracy being defined as a ruling, you know, a governance by everybody, well, that certainly wasn't true. We know women didn't vote, you know, and African-Americans and Indigenous people. And so really, there's been a delusion about whether we've ever really had democracy. To the degree that we have fought for it, and to the degrees of a representative democracy that's maybe better than some other forms of government. You know, the old saying, it's the worst form of government on the world, except for all the rest. Right. Well, that's not true. That's not true, though, because if we look at the definition of Indigenous spirituality, that as I've defined it over the many years, Indigenous spirituality is a sacred recognition in the significance of everyone. And everyone is not just the two-legged. It's the four-legged, it's the swimmers, the crawlers, the rooted ones, the flyers. Well, by definition, if that is your spiritual essence, to give recognition and significance to others and the respect of that, that's the root of what democracy is. And when we don't have that, then democracy is always a compromise that will ultimately go to the more powerful or the more wealthy. And so I think educators, if they can get back to the fundamental idea of worldview, which has been in education for a long time. I mean, Robert Redfield out of the University of Chicago brought it back into the academy, saying that there's really only, he said it in the 30s, he said there was only three worldviews. There's the Eastern, Western, and the primal one, or the Indigenous one. by the end of the 50s, he said, well, there's only two now. The spiritual traditions of the East are closer to the indigenous ones, but they have embraced in terms of education, economics, social thought, entertainment, sports, pretty much the Western ones. So he said there's only two of them. And the greatest tragedy of human history is the overshadowing of the primal one by what they called the metropolitan one, or our dominant one. And so if educators can get back into the science of worldview, and now the United Nations has recognized it and their largest study ever done in 2019, and just recently in my presentation there, UC Berkeley's Science Center for the Greater Good has recognized it and relative to our endorsing our book. So if we think of this as a science, and we look at, okay, let's talk about the science of worldview reflection and metacognitive worldview reflection and transformation, not as a good or bad, not as a rigid dichotomy, because that is a trait of the dominant worldview, is this binary, but in a non-binary, a union of the opposites, a looking at, for example, we look at the polarities of the on the worldview chart, of hierarchy versus non-hierarchy, of living with a strong social purpose or without it, of focus on self and personal gain or community welfare, of materialistic or spirit. We could go on, down all of these. We're all in the same boat by having a foot in each one of those. Even indigenous peoples are. And we've got to find our balance again. And that is the job of educators, is to rebalance the places we're out of balance. And if we don't look at these, and instead we look at cultures and religions and ideologies and educational philosophies and the ontologies that we are creating, all of those things fall under a worldview. Now,
I just want to, the number 844-967-2789, our guest Four Arrows, Indigenous Ways of Knowing. You touched on something, and I think people, though, have, a little bit science in Indigenous ways of knowing. For my neighbor, he's sitting there going, science is totally separate from Indigenous ways of knowing. You're saying that there's studies out there saying, oh, no, Tim and Tim's neighbor, Indigenous ways of knowing and science aren't at odds with each other.
Exactly. Because if we look at science as a systematic study of the behavior of the physical and natural world, there's nothing that has been more systematic and as a study than the thousands and tens of thousands of years of observation and testing and experiment and handing down of information about how to live in balance. And this is what worldview is, except worldview narrows it to the relationship of human beings with other than human being nature. We're part of nature, even though if you look at a lot of dictionaries, including Oxford, if you look up the word nature, it'll say everything but humans. But if we include ourselves in that, then the science of this systematic study, not this fragmented.
We're going to get right back to that.
All right.
Science, Indigenous worldview, more when we get back.
Super.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. Caught up in the middle as the war rages on between Israel and Hamas, this 15-year-old boy in Gaza is terrified.
I can barely stand it, he says. We just want to be secure. Our dream is to live. That's all we want.
The BBC's Nick Beek is near the border between Israel and the Gaza Strip as Israeli aircraft fly overhead.
We've had quite a lot of activity in the air. There's been the distinctive buzz of Israeli drones, but also the fighter pilots are going overhead. A few seconds later, we've heard large booms, bearing in mind we are 7 miles away.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken continues his Middle East shuttle diplomacy trip, trying to stop other nations from being drawn into the war started by Hamas.
Hamas is a terrorist group. Its only agenda is to destroy the state of Israel and to murder Jews.
Blinken is now heading to Egypt after stops that have included Saudi Arabia and Israel. CBS News Special Report. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Time out.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The TV is selling something no one can be.
That's not what we do. You're always selling something you want to be. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, Indigenous Peoples Day, Indigenous ways of knowing, our guest for Arrows, helping us make sense of this, how we bring all of these concepts together, because the reality is that, you know, we heard it last week. I mean, the future is at stake here. And for us, that idea, Indigenous ways of knowing and science. If I'm a fifth grade teacher and I'm looking at my standards that say it's time for me to teach science, and there's no room for Indigenous ways of knowing, help that fifth grade teacher understand that no, your standards and Indigenous ways of knowing and science, they go together.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I write this in my book, Teaching Truly, a Curriculum to Indigenize Mainstream Education. The University of Chicago's Wisdom Project selected it as one of the 20 books, along with Paulo Freire and John Dewey. And this idea of science and standards, even, we can support the standards. It's the examples of how to implement the standards that are problematic. But if you look at the standards, and I describe them in the book, indigeneity can fit right into it. So this idea of thinking about, well, wait a minute, how can we call an indigenous worldview or way of being in the world, how can we call that a science? That doesn't make sense. Well, there's two important things to note. First of all, if you want to look at Western science and say what you think of it and how you think of it and how it's created technologies, what we do know about Western science and its history is that it's strongly influenced by worldview. And we won't go into examples and details, but I think, you know, your audience out there will recognize, that makes sense. Greg Cahedy and I wrote a book called Critical Neurophilosophy. Now, we invented that because we were going to write a book called Indigenous Wisdom and Neuroscience. And thinking that neuroscience would support the precepts of indigenous worldview. Well, when we had our science students and our students that were in neuropsychology and neuroscience at the university for their doctorate, when they sent us back the reports, there were things like, well, there really is no such thing as altruistic generosity, because when we touch a place in the brain scientifically in our laboratories, after somebody gives monopoly money away, when they're tapped on the shoulder, it happens to light up in the same place where we saw selfishness. So therefore, all generosity is ultimately about getting something back for yourself. Well, we got more and more of those things on all seven of our topics. And Greg and I said, what are we going to do? You know, we're not doing what we thought would happen here. So we created critical neurophilosophy, and we expose it and challenge these kinds of things as science based on preconceptions of a worldview. This is how important worldview is, just on that level, right? Let alone, like I said earlier, that indigenous science is certainly meets the definitions of even Western science, but it involves things like spirituality. Just one little closing statement to give you a sense of how extreme we can go with that. University of Virginia's Perceptual Studies program by Ian Stevenson, who's no longer with us, was so respected for its work in life after death, which is a pretty far out thing, when you would think, you know, not a science, I could get it and send it to you, but a Nobel scientist, a quantum physicist, said that research is as good as anything that he's ever seen in quantum physics, right? So we're a long way from identifying what science is when we start doubting that indigeneity has a science that is missing from, and this is, you know, the largest United Nations study on biodiversity ever done in 2019, 15,000 peer-reviewed papers, 450 scientists in four places. They say where indigenous worldview was operating, this extinction rate was non-existent or severely reduced. You can read my article in The Nation called "What the Media Missed an Important Message in the UN a biodiversity report."
Four arrows. I think that's a really important point and really useful for us here on the show and for our listeners to hear. Can you summarize that a little bit for us? Take us back to that report and particularly how you illuminate that missed, you know, aspect of the report, that connection between biodiversity. Yeah.
Well, I think we can all agree that in a time of climate change, that science is really, everybody's looking at science to help us.
Yeah.
Well, if 80% of the biodiversity on planet Earth today is on the 20% of the landmass only that indigenous people manage, that alone is a factor, an effect that makes us think, well, then what is the science that indigenous peoples are using to be able to have, you know, this amazing phenomenon? A year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago at Santa Barbara, there was a meeting of congressmen and senators talking about the water crisis, and the leader of the Chumash was there in his suit and tie, talking about per capita use of water with technology and science. And the Chumash were something like, I don't know, don't quote me, but like 50 times better in terms of management of water than the most sophisticated community in California. And so we had questions and answers at the end, and I went up at the end, and I didn't know what he was going to say. I mean, in a suit and tie with senators and congressmen. And I said, can you tell me if the indigenous worldview and your spiritual understanding of how to live in this world had anything to do with your success in this incredible statistic? And he just got a big smile on his face, and he said it was the main driver.
Well, so on that main driver, and this is what you say, how is there a way to say, well, the indigenous worldview, better water quality? Somebody out there, again, my neighbor's going, but why? What is it about the indigenous worldview that makes better water quality?
Well, here's a real simple answer. Just the word for water. Say water again. Just say it.
Water.
All right. Now, you probably say that when you go and get a drink and you pour half of it out and throw it in the toilet or whatever. Now, say Mini Wichoni, M-N-I, Mini Wichoni.
Mini Wichoni.
Okay. The best I can, and when I was on Pine Ridge as Dean of Education, I've had this explained to me over and over, and this is the best I can give you, and it's still not good enough, but Mini Wichoni, which is the word for water, Mini Wichoni is saying, this is life. Giving as if from the mother's milk. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how, just with that understanding deep inside, not as a translation, but this is what it is, how you treat water is going to be completely different, and how you respect it. And if you see it as an entity, like we did at Standing Rock, I did 4 tours of duty there. And every morning we went down to the river, and the women led us in singing songs to the river, to the spirits of the river. It sounds New Age-ish, it sounds fantasy, it doesn't sound science, but ultimately it is proven to be sustainable and based on observations and relationships, which are part of the scientific method.
That, I mean, there's a value statement in that, where you're saying, like water versus, and Johnny, you put it there in the chat, people can't see that who's listening, water is life. The meaning then truly that we ascribe to something such as water, if it's, as you said, for it's just something I take out of the tap and could potentially throw back down, flush the toilet. No concept of it other than, quote, as like a tool that I can always access, as opposed to a value laden concept that water is a sustaining to my life. Then my worldview knowledge of it changes, and then hopefully my behaviors in the way I treat it. I think that's what you're saying, right?
But go even deeper and think of it as a relation. Instead of calling a natural resource a natural resource, if everybody started calling them a relative with a heartfelt sense of how we used to treat relatives, right? Mm-hmm. And Black Elk said in 1876, when he was talking about civilization, he said, I don't know what we can learn here. People don't treat each other with respect. There's people that are poor. There's people that are, but if you really treated them with the sentience and understanding of a relation, like people read The Secret Life of Trees, right? And they go, wow, I cannot believe that they can help each other fight an insect. Well, we've known, indigenous people, our ancestors, and I'm looking at you, your ancestors, all of our ancestors had this wisdom until they didn't.
Johnny, so think about, because you were, I know math teacher, but science educator, ecological work. How do you situate this then? Let's make the pivot. You're working with future teachers. How do you bring Four Arrows and what he's talking about into the classroom of helping future teachers be to incorporate indigenous ways of knowing into the pedagogy and curriculum they're going to put forward.
Yeah, Tim, I'll simplify it because I think that should be a whole like extended podcast that we have some other fantastic folks that do that work on to share their stories. But similar to what Four Arrows is sharing, really, really engaging teachers and acknowledging the, you know, the assumptions that they carry into even how they identify themselves as a human being. So what are you? Like, we are bodies of water. We're, you know, like traditional science, not traditional ecological knowledges, but, you know, science or modern science, you know, tells us we are some 80% water. Mm. Well, you know, what if we make water relational in that way? What are some of the assumptions between an ecological worldview that is, you know, mature, and in many ways we might even say like ancient or long existing in indigenous knowledges around the planet, common, that there is no singular human being, or there is no singular species. Everything is interconnected and interrelated and interdependent. And so, you know, we use some visuals in the classroom around, you know, how has modern Eurocentric thought, which, you know, which Four Arrows talks about here when he's saying, he points to us, Tim, he says, even you, because mm-hmm. Tim, our roots, even in a pre-deindigenized Europe, mm-hmm. right? I won't say like pre-colonization, because colonization, as we know, it kind of emerges from there, but a pre-deindigenized Europe, there are land-based cultures, right, that are ancient and wise, and acknowledge that interdependency in a very different way fundamentally. So that's one thing, is we're always looking at sort of those juxtaposed worldviews. The next piece about it is we don't teach about indigenous knowledges. We learn from and teach with them. And so that's a big thing, because then we're not reproducing that sort of colonial mindset of appropriation or quick grabbing a solution now and not acknowledging, you know, the historical significance of events that have happened, like colonization and genocide on this continent and around the world. So really thinking about how we ourselves are learning to think about ourselves in relationship to each other and to a multitude of species.
You know what this sounds like to me? This sounds to me like this is an invitation to Four Arrows for an extended podcast interview. Four Arrows, what do you think? You're going to join Johnny and I, and really, let's spend just a lot of time digging into this.
Let's do it. I'd be honored. And you can start with looking at the article, The Indigenization Controversy, For Whom, By Whom, to look at the misappropriation issues. Right.
Well, and that's what we're going to do. Our guest, thank you for busting pencils, Four Arrows. When we get back, Johnny and Tim break it down right after the break.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
We always love those memos, busted pencils. Fully leaded education talk. The number 844-967-2789. If you wanted to get in and give us a call, we had a great guest, Four Arrows. Not really a lot of time for any phone calls. Indigenous Peoples Day, acknowledging that yesterday, but more importantly, talking about Indigenous ways of knowing, bringing Indigenous ways of knowing to the forefront here when we're talking about this, Johnny Lupinacci. You know, educated educators talking education would mean then that Indigenous ways of knowing should be part of the conversation. Explain that better to us, because I mean, you and Four Arrows have a long-term relationship, and I'm kind of new to this conversation. So, you know, help us understand this idea of, you know, if I'm an educator, how Indigenous ways of knowing should be not, as you said, not part of something that I use to appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, something to become like, my core.
Yeah. For Tim, I mean, and I think a lot of educators out there, especially, you know, this generation of teachers, and I won't group them based on age, but, you know, folks coming to education in this particular moment are conscious of, you know, the troubled and problematic, to put mildly, histories, especially on this continent, but really throughout the world, right? You know, the act of genocide on First Nations people. And so there's also a level of, can I do this, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we think about it in terms of, if I'm, you know, if I'm primarily English speaking and I'm a math teacher, you know, how and where do I fit into, you know, bringing traditional, you know, ecological knowledges or Indigenous perspectives into my classroom? One, I'm not a keeper of those knowledges and stories. And so I probably and hopefully learn that that's not my right to teach. It doesn't originate from me. In other words, I can't appropriate it. I can't take something sacred from a cultural group and then present it as though it's mine. And that's something that's deeply colonial and assumed often in education. You know, the teacher is an expert and they share that knowledge as though they've gained it and own it and then pass it on. And that's something that, you know, creates a tension with Indigenous knowledges, is because they ought not to be taken, like, you know, owned in any way and then shared, except by those who have gone through the relationship of becoming an elder or becoming a teacher in that culture. And so there's a tension there of a lot of teachers that say, well, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this and not appropriate knowledge, or how to, as you said, incorporate it without, you know, and do it justice. Right. And so what I was, you know, pointing towards is that there's really good models. And, you know, I think in the education world, coming to us from Canada and from New Zealand in particular, and Australia, not too far behind that. And like you said, states like Wisconsin and Oregon, Washington and Montana, and there are others, you know, Four Arrows mentioned Gregory Cahete, who, you know, shares a lot of examples of how, you know, science can be taught in particular through an Indigenous lens. But for us, and I'll largely blanket us under, you know, European culture or white teachers, the acknowledgement that the humility necessary in sort of the model coming from other countries in terms of, you know, Canada, they call it truth and reconciliation, acknowledging that there's a tension there and being humble about learning to do different, right? Not proclaiming now here's a solution and let's just shift We've been doing this wrong for 500 some plus years, not just shift, because that shift is easier said than done, but to really honoring space, holding space for and saying, you know, let's teach together with and learn from, not teach about, is a really different kind of presence in the classroom.
You know what, Tony? So, let's go. We got a caller there. Just you know,
ooh, all right.
That. But man, but breaking it down. Mark is on the phone. Mark, what's going on?
Yeah, thanks so much. And I just recently saw an article that came up on my feed that about we shouldn't as the people that came in after, you know, and suppressed the indigenous people, we shouldn't feel bad about that because after all, the indigenous people were happily slaughtering one another well before we even got here. And I thought, well, that's not really quite, you know, yes, they were warring with one another. Various tribes had various wars and going on, but they also had various, you know, groups that were trying to forge some kind of alliances and stuff, and that they were more than that. But to try to say, well, that people are nasty to other people no matter where you're from, but to try to excuse what happened when the Europeans arrived in North America is not, you know, just saying that, well, some people were doing nasty stuff to one another before we got here, so it's okay whatever happened after that. I just, I don't know if it's, I can't feel guilty about what our forebears did, but I can at least be culturally and think critically about how, what happened and how that's impacting even us today. And I'm putting that inarticulately, I'm sorry, but
No, Mark. I mean I hear exactly, you know, what you're saying. It's you know, the ability to critically think, reflect, acknowledge and recognize that there is, as Johnny was talking about this in Canada, the truth and reconciliation. The idea here, Johnny, right, to kind of like, you know, there's a, before we can, you know, I can, all of the wonderful things, and we're going to look forward to having, you know, Four Arrows on for the extended podcast, Indigenous Ways of Knowing, but to bring that into, as you said, Johnny, humility, as, you know, because what the last thing we want is an educator out there or a student or, you know, or my neighbor thinking, well, okay, Indigenous Ways of Knowing are off limits to me as a colonial European. That's not what you're saying, Johnny. We're saying there's a humility there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and so this is accessible when you think about this in the indigenous ways. And Johnny, you said the word too earlier, ancient or long, you know, these ways of knowing. And what I really like about Four Arrows is he points out something very simplistic about this from the science standpoint. The idea that indigenous ways of knowing are built on long time observations. Well, geez, could you imagine the whole idea? Wait, observation, isn't that the first thing we teach in science education is that we have to be observers to that. Man, Johnny, yeah. Busted pencils, fully leaded. Looking forward to next week in the extended podcast. See you next time.
Want more busted pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
It's time for corny jokes about passing the torch.
The team at Kirian's Welding was fused together solid.
Thanks for all the late nights and early shifts.
But double retirements mean the crew must bond with some certified new hires.
You've both gone the extra millimeter.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates, and you can schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from the Indeed dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Attention high school sports fans, are you an armchair official? You know, the parent or fan who constantly yells at the referees and loves to let everyone know just how bad you think they are. Well, if you think you could do better, then get in the game and prove it. It's time for you to suit up and make the calls where they actually count. Every sport in Wisconsin needs more officials. Sign up today at highschoolofficials.com.